Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I am your host, Rick Stevens, and folks, remember that this is your show. If you've got questions you'd like to have answered, if there's a topic you want to hear a little bit more about, feel free to give me a call, 719-500-8700. You can also shoot me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or simply go to the website, frsfinancialgroup.com. Click that contact tab, send us that question, that message, that topic you'd like to hear more about. We would love to hear from you. Well, folks, this week on Money Matters, I am joined in studio, as always, by the one, the only, thank goodness, Andrew Rogers. Andrew, how are we doing this week?
Doing fantastic. How are you doing, Rick?
You know what? I've got to tell you, it's a good week in the Stevens house again.
Okay. Good.
So, you know, I told you here a little bit before the show that, you know, there's some stuff that I kind of want to bring up in here a little bit. Andrew, I now have a truck again. Sort of.
No,
it's not my truck that's in Montana coming back. So I'll leave with that.
Did you get the approval to replace a part of the fleet, or did the back of the Suburban just happen to fall off?
Actually, we're not replacing a part of the fleet. We're adding to the fleet. We are adding to the fleet. And part of that comes because my dad, who is, you know, in his early 70s, decided it wasn't as easy to get up into his truck anymore. So he bought a new Maverick and said, "Hey, I know that you don't mind adding to the fleet. Do you want to buy my truck?"
Okay.
So, granted, my new truck-ish, 2014, is still sitting in a barn in Illinois, but we'll eventually make it
Baby steps.
But I did pay full price for it, so it can be my truck, right? Well, it's not my dad's truck.
No, and, you know, call back to a few weeks ago here on Money Matters when we were talking about making those plans for retirement and having that money set aside for your dad to replace the truck.
Yes.
So...
yeah, so it all kind of works in there together.
Yeah.
And it also, Andrew, fits our theme today because today also joining us in studio, one of the truck guys over at Leadham's, Greg Budwine. Budwine, how are we today?
Good morning, man. I'm doing awesome. I'm glad you're getting another truck. That's cool.
Well, it just adds to the fleet that we're bringing to you
to
get that maintenance done on. Folks, we do have to throw out that disclosure that LPL Financial and FRS Financial do not endorse the guests that appear on Money Matters. But that doesn't mean, Budwine, that we don't frequent the business.
I understand.
So I want to, I'm going to jump right in here this week because I was having a conversation with a listener just the other day.
Okay.
And he had some questions that I think, Budwine, you could probably answer
here. We can try.
And his question was, in that gasoline versus diesel side of life, in the truck world, and he said, well, you know the truck guys, so ask the truck guys the question. And his first question was, when I'm looking at trucks, gasoline versus diesel, what is the real difference I'm looking at other than the fuel going in? So
well,
that's
cool,
the first question.
The cool part is there's a huge difference. And I think the major player in the difference is diesels can tow better than anything in the whole wide world. So diesels create more torque, gasolines create more RPM. That's the biggest difference. So if you're doing any towing at all, diesel's where it's at. If you're driving to work every day, if you're driving back and forth from home to work or the grocery store or picking up the kid, gasoline's a great option. But the biggest difference is diesels do a lot of towing and they do a lot of work and they're good at it.
Yeah, I I think that means I've learned from the truck guys, because that's basically the answer I gave him. I said, if you want to pull something, you need the torque from the diesel.
Yes.
If you're just driving, just take the gas, because you're going to end up all right. So he's got follow-ups, though.
Okay.
So you kind of hit that part, right? The towing piece really is where you want to look at that and consider that diesel. Are there other times that somebody should consider diesel versus gasoline, other than just towing?
Well, I think it depends on what you're going to do with the truck. Diesels are designed to go long distance also.
Mm-hmm.
They're also designed to run a lot. So if you're someone that lives, El Paso County is a pretty big county.
Yes, yes.
And so if you live outside of town somewhere to enjoy peace and quiet and get away from the big city, diesel's much better to drive into town every day because you're driving a long ways. So those guys that are driving from El Paso County to Denver or back to Pueblo, or those guys that are doing a lot of driving, diesel also they like to run. So that's a big deal with diesel. The cool part about gasoline is gasoline's changed a lot in the last 10 years. Most everything in a truck today has gasolines or turboed.
Mm-hmm.
So they do get better fuel economy. They do run better, but they come with a lot more maintenance. So I used to say the biggest difference in diesel and gas was diesels were way more expensive to operate.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true today, because now most everything built today in a gasoline world in a pickup truck generally have turbos, and they're more expensive to maintain as well. So,
and the one, Andrew, that's going to be coming back to me from Illinois has a turbo in it.
I bet it does. Yes. Yes.
Welcome to a little bit more expense. Last question from Dave here. Are there anything special that someone should need to know or know that they're going to need to do when they own a diesel, especially if they've never owned one before? If they've only ever owned gasoline engines, are there things that they need to realize, hey, you're going to have to do XYZ differently, which this is actually going to roll right into our winter maintenance as well, in things like the winter with a diesel engine?
Well, the key is a diesel doesn't like to sit. Gasoline, you can park a gasoline for 2 months, fire it up, drive it wherever you want to go. Diesels do not like that. So the key is, if you own a diesel or you're trying to decide which one to get, you got to make sure you're going to be driving them. That's number one. The maintenance in today's world, in today's diesel, the key is good, clean fuel. So in a diesel, it's harder to keep the fuel clean if you don't drive it, mm-hmm. number one. But number two, they also have what we call a water separator and fuel filter in them, because diesels do not like water at all. Gasolines can shove water through the fuel systems. Diesels cannot. So those filters have to be serviced a lot more often. And as a matter of fact, gasoline is so much better at it now. Most gasoline vehicles don't have a fuel filter on them anymore. They just have a fuel filter at the end of the pump in the tank. So there's a few things that are different about diesel, but the key is, if you own a diesel, you got to drive it. You can't just put it in the garage.
Yeah, and with the time change and with weather changing here before we know it, when it comes to diesel, I remember years and years ago with my granddad's old diesel truck that it was always time to pull out the little, things to snap into the grill to keep it a little bit warmer. Is that still something that people need to keep an eye on when you're thinking about diesels going into the winter months?
Well, the only reason we did that back then was because the technology was so driven to keep the engine cool that we couldn't keep the passengers warm in the truck. And they've changed that now.
Okay.
So they do a really good job. Once they're warm and they stay warm. And which keeps the driver and the occupants of the vehicle warm too. So
awesome. Well, kind of rolling through that winter sort of maintenance concept. And I know we hit this again last winter, but just in case somebody up in Montana may or may not be listening, because he may or may not have listened last year. You get those, nights where they get really cold.
Yes.
Into that, minus 10, minus 20, minus 30 world. What is the best way to make sure that vehicle is going to start the next day when we really hit those amazingly frigid cold temperatures?
Well, the only way to really do it in any vehicle, gas or diesel, is with a block heater. When temperatures get that cold, you're asking all the metal in the engine to turn over. It's all cold. mm-hmm. and it creates some problems most of the time. So the real solution when it gets that cold is to use a block heater. If you're driving a gasoline and it doesn't have one, you can install one. Same with a diesel. Most diesels come with a block heater mm-hmm. just to warm the coolant up. That does two purposes. One, it makes it easier to start, but it also allows heat to the occupants in the vehicle pretty immediately. So a block heater is the way to go when you're in those frigid, really cold temperatures.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, back in my days in Alaska that there was also, you know, if you didn't have the means, and obviously, you know, now we're kind of having more of those discussions.
Right.
If you can't do that full engine block heater, there is an oil pan heater to at least start getting the liquid and the
yes.
stuff going. Is that mm-hmm. maybe sufficient even if you're not in the extremes, but really some of those cold nights we have here?
You can, yes. Anything that weren't in those oil pan engine heaters basically warm the engine from the bottom up, right? So if the oil's warm, then it warms everything while it's traveling. So anything you can do, we used to back in, I sound like an old guy now, but back in the day.
back in my day.
Yeah, you could
somebody
put
somebody who was also born in the 70s, yes, we're not that old.
No, we're not that old. You could put a drop lamp under engines in your garage when it was that cold, and those would create enough heat to help those diesel engines start.
Well, that was back when we were allowed to have incandescent bulbs.
That is correct. That, like I said, yeah,
back in
technology
the day,
is changing.
That LED is not going to put out enough.
No, definitely not. Nope.
So as we are moving then into those winter months, and, you know, we're getting cooler nights, and eventually it's going to get cold overnight.
Yes.
What are some of those, maybe some basic winter maintenance tips that you can pass on to those listeners? So, you know, things that they might need to do on a daily or weekly or even monthly basis at home to be able to keep those vehicles running smoothly when those temps do head much further south?
Well, the key is to keep them as warm as you can. So obviously, if you can put them in a garage, that helps. The other thing is to, even if you're not using the vehicle, sometimes we have a tendency to get a lot of snow,
mm-hmm.
and we cover the vehicles with snow. Even if you're not going to use the vehicle, if you'll knock the snow off of that vehicle, that helps as well. The other thing is it's really important in the wintertime to keep the fuel system, get it cleaned before winter gets here. That's number one. So fuel filter, clean the injectors. Doesn't matter if it's gas or diesel. And the other thing is to keep, if you can, keep as much fuel in the vehicle as you can. When you start getting past that quarter mark, when the temperatures really drop, if there's any water, which happens when big temperature swings happen, you get condensation. And so water has a tendency to freeze in the tank, and the more fuel you can have in the fuel tank, the better off you are, because it will keep itself from freezing. That's number two. And number three, you got to make sure everything's clean. So the cooling system's clean, the air filter's clean, fuel filters are clean, those kinds of things, engine-wise, engine-related. That will make sure the vehicle starts every time. And if it's a gasoline, it's really important, and the manufacturers have really changed their outlook on spark plug replacement, but in our area and in colder areas, it's not good to have spark plugs that you change only every 100,000 miles, because the gap gets bigger, and when that gap gets bigger, it gets harder to start when it's cold.
Right.
So a good tune-up on a gasoline vehicle would be very important, and that's about, as long as you can keep everything clean and get it clean before the cold temperatures come. I tell everyone this is a great time of year. We're in the middle of September now. We're headed into October. This is a great time of year to just get everything looked at, to include tires, because we don't know what the roads are going to be like, right? And it's just a great time of year to – it's funny because we tell everyone with an RV that it's time to winterize your motorhome so anything doesn't freeze, right? But it's really time for the average Joe to de-winterize their car and make sure it's ready for winter.
Yeah, and that's I'm glad, and hopefully there are those folks out there listening that take to heart, fill up before you get to that quarter of a tank. Don't wait for the light to come on
to say,
how do we get there? And, you know, I'm going to tell a little story here,
okay.
Andrew. Years ago, when my oldest was really little, he told a little story about his mom, that nobody drives as fast as my mom when that gas light comes on. So get to that gas station, folks, before you get below that quarter of a tank and the gas light comes on.
Well, and we're programmed today. A lot of people are programmed because of the electronics we have in all of our vehicles. It says you got 100 miles to empty, or you got 150 miles to empty. You got 48 miles to empty, but that can change very, very quickly based on temperature, because that miles to empty left is a calculation over 26, 36 gallons of fuel. And if the temperature drops, you're going to use more fuel. So what it says miles to empty is not necessarily the case, and you will be out of fuel.
Yeah. Yeah, one of those things that that I have seen, and again, I've read it a couple of times, but you know, this is also the Gen Xer in me thinking, just because I read that somebody wrote this, I don't know that that's necessarily the right answer, and thought I should ask a truck guy about this.
All right,
which was on those cold days. Don't leave that vehicle warming up for more than about 30 seconds. It only needs about 30 seconds, then you can throw it in drive and go. Is that the case? Does it really only take a few seconds for, especially on the cold days, for that engine to get up and get going, especially if you don't have a block heater or an oil pan heater? Or should I give it a little bit more time to wake up?
I would give it a little more time to wake up. My advice has always been the colder it is, the more seconds it needs to go. So the key is, you're not just warming up an engine. You're warming up the brakes. You're warming up the transmission. Once you start rolling, you're going to warm up the differentials, whether it's front or rear. And it just takes a little while to do that. They say... averagely, they say not to run your cars for 5 or 10 minutes, and there's a reason for that, and that is back in the old days, we had carburetors, and a car wouldn't run very good until it came off of its choke,
mm-hmm.
because we were pouring the fuel to get the engine running, and it just took longer to warm up. Today, it doesn't take as long as a carburetor, but 30 seconds isn't very long to get the transmission fluid circulated, get the oil where it needs to be, get the fuel moving good. And so the colder it is, the longer you should let it run before you decide, hey, I'm going to take off and here we go. But you don't need to let it run for 10 minutes. I mean, the key is, back in the old days when carburetors were, there were some vehicles that they wouldn't go anywhere if they didn't run for 8 or 10 minutes, right? So that's not the case today, but 30 seconds, if it's below zero, 30 seconds isn't enough.
Yeah. Last quick question here, and this comes from my Midwest roots out there. Okay. Especially when we were in the Chicago area, anytime they were forecasting this big snow coming, you see everybody who has their vehicle parked outside, they've all got the wipers lifted up, right? Mm-hmm. Pointing straight out.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the world do people point the wipers straight out when there's a snow coming?
Well, I'm going to answer this professionally as I can, but most of that is because back east, when you get snow, you have a lot of ice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't lift the wipers off of the windshield and you turn the wipers on when you get in the car, it strips the wiper motor, and now you have no wipers to go home. So the key for me is, you will see my truck with my wiper blades up,
mm-hmm.
but I will promise you it would be below zero and ice is falling, or it's been overnight and ice is really thick, because the issue is you tear stuff up if the windshield wipers are froze to the windshield, and then you got to run the car or the vehicle for 20 minutes so you can get the ice off of the window so the wipers will work. And we've even seen it sometimes. We've had customers that the wipers were going when they got home, and they didn't turn them off and get them in park mode, so they're stuck halfway on the window. And then next morning, they go out and fire it up. Well, the wipers are automatically going to work,
right?
Because they didn't turn them off, and that tears a wiper motor up pretty fast.
Wow. Yeah. So good information to have. Let's make sure they turn the wipers off.
So what I'm hearing is, just park in the garage, and you'll save yourself a lot of issues.
Yes, that would be the better thing to do.
Awesome. Well, folks, we are in a spot to take that first break in today's show. When we come back, we are continuing to talk with Greg Budwine from Leadham's Performance Diesel and Repair. We're talking all things, not just truck, but we're talking all things vehicle. So stick around. We will be right back.
Money affects each of us in different ways. Sometimes it's a source of stress and fear. Sometimes it's a source of comfort and security. Whatever your perspective, it's always good to get a second set of eyes on your finances to help serve as a guide. If you are looking for that guidance, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC.
Welcome back to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group right here on KRDO News Radio. I'm Andrew Rogers, along with Rick Stevens. We have Greg Budwine in with Leadums as we're talking about that winter car prep. And Greg, you know, you mentioned a tiny bit during that first segment about making sure that your tires are ready. And I've got to ask you this question as well, because I know we all really like to lean on the technology, but sometimes it fails. That tire pressure light up there on your dashboard, it's not always an indication, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's a low tire, but it's just that it's not within the right range, correct? It could be almost be too high.
It could be too high. Yes, that's true.
Yep. And yeah, because I may or may not have had a mother-in-law come over with that, especially on those little low-profile tires.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Coming up about 20, 30 pounds too high. I'm like, well, good thing you didn't hit a pothole.
Yes, yes.
But that's
yes.
One of the things, you know, not only do we need to worry about, you know, our tire, you know, condition, that we have the right tire depth, but also keeping that proper pressure as well when we're going into the winter months.
Yes. The key for me is we've created a bunch of indicators just because of technology. We've created a lot of indicators to tell us what's going on with our car. Mm-hmm. Or our truck, right. Or our vehicles for that matter. And the electronics is doing their job to make sure everything's staying within a certain range. And that's even true with a check engine light. That's true with an airbag light. If something's out of range, that's what turns those lights on the dash. So it's not a, and we see it a lot. People get to where they don't pay attention to that. As long as they're paying attention to whatever light is on, like tires, TPMS sensors, if you're checking the tires and they're okay, then you don't have to pay attention to that light. Yeah. But today, most people don't do that.
Yeah. And is it something as well, and it might just be me, and I'm, because I drive a vehicle that has four letters and may or may not have won us our freedom back in the 40s. But is it something, too, that maybe people should look at that tire pressure and maybe run maybe a little lower, especially if we have a big snowstorm coming versus that full, you know, maybe more normal higher pressure when it's just dry highway condition?
I would not recommend that at all. The key is that vehicle was designed for a specific tire pressure, front as well as rear. And the cool part is that tire pressure is right on the door sticker for the vehicle. So you can look at that door sticker. And the reason those pressures are what they are is to carry the weight of that vehicle.
Okay.
So it's I never recommend going over or under unless you're in an extreme scenario and you know what you're doing. You can do that if you're a four-wheel drive guy in the mountains and you know you only want 18 PSI in your tires to climb 42-foot rocks and you're going to air them up when you get back on the road. But that's a totally different scenario. Everyday drivers, that door sticker says it is what it is, and that's what we stick to.
Yeah, and that's also one of those things where I was just in this situation about a week ago, looking at what should the tire pressure be, because my door sticker has a totally different number on it than the actual tire says. The tire says 44 PSI. My door sticker says 34 PSI. So it's really knowing what the vehicle needs, not just going by whatever that tire might say that it needs.
That's correct. And the reason that is because that's what that tire will take. Because that tire probably fits a multitude of vehicles.
Right.
That's not what the vehicle needs to operate properly.
Awesome. Now thinking about this, because I am adding to my fleet, we will be up to, you know, when I get the truck back, we will have five vehicles and only three licensed drivers in the house, but I've got other licensed drivers coming and going.
Yes.
From there. When folks are looking to, you know, maybe add a new vehicle or swap out a vehicle, you know, they're going to trade something in and get something new,
What are some of those important things that they need to be able to request? Because not everybody has that opportunity to go, hey, I know the one person who drove this for the last 10 years.
Right.
I know exactly how it was cared for. What are some of those things that folks out buying a vehicle really need to look at that's going to help them maintain it for that long period of time?
I think the key is there's two things. One is we at Leadham's, we do a really good job with what we call a pre-purchase inspection, and we work really close with those guys that are selling vehicles. We make it really easy. The best thing to do is have someone that knows what they're doing look over that vehicle, aside from the guy that's selling it.
Right.
And give a good overview of what the vehicle needs, looks like, how it's been taken care of. The second best thing is maintenance records. If you're buying it from an individual, most of the time when you're buying it from a dealership, those maintenance records you can't find. However, you can use CarMax. And we actually report to CarMax every VIN that we work on. So there's a history on everything that we touch by VIN. Sometimes you have to pay for it, but you can get it. Most of the dealerships use CarMax to prove that the car hasn't been wrecked.
Right.
But there's a lot of other information in CarMax. Carfax. I keep saying CarMax. Carfax. There's a lot of information in there, and a lot of us report to that. So you can tell how the vehicle's been taken care of, whether or not it was. The interesting part is looking at the vehicle and looking at a Carfax, we see it all the time. If a vehicle was wrecked and the insurance didn't do the job, it's not reported to Carfax. So the vehicle could have been wrecked, and we can see that if we look over the vehicle.
Yeah.
Because you can tell, hey, they've taken a fender off, or the bumper's bolts are missing, or you know, whatever we see when we're looking at the vehicle, or it has water damage.
Right.
There's some really easy things we can pull apart to make sure the vehicle hasn't been in a flood and whatever. So I think those three are the big important ones. But to me, it's getting someone that knows what they're looking at to look at the vehicle and just look it over. We try to keep it inexpensive because we don't want anyone to purchase a vehicle that they have to dump tons of money into.
Right.
Because they didn't know anything about it. And it's just a really easy, good report. Takes us about an hour. And we'll shuffle it between whoever's selling it and whoever's buying it. We help with that program because we want you to get a good vehicle.
Yeah, and that's you guys actually did that for me back here at the beginning of the year when we were looking at buying a truck that would have been my son's rather than my truck going to Montana.
Yes.
And you guys took the look and went, you know what, mechanically it's great, but where did it come from? Well, came from Canada. Well, that would explain the rust on the bottom because of all the salt that they use.
Yes.
So again, it's not just the mechanical piece that you guys look at. You guys really do look at it. Literally, you know, nose to toes, if you will.
We do. Yep.
So awesome. Now, one of the things, a piece of information that we've probably seen a little bit in the media of, but I got a little bit more insight on actually earlier today. We've seen the UAW, right, on strike.
Yes.
We see the big three auto manufacturers basically shut down. That's 250,000 cars, new cars a week that aren't being produced, which typically is going to mean the used car cost is about to go up again.
It is.
What are some of those really important things folks maybe don't necessarily always think about, but will help them extend the life of their current vehicle rather than having to go, oh my goodness, we're going to replace it, and I can't replace it with a new one, but holy cow, the price of the used was shot through the roof. How do I maintain it in such a way I don't have to make that purchase the next few years?
Right. Well, I think the key is, depending on the vehicle and depending on how many miles, there's all kinds of lines that can be driven there. But I love to tell this story, and I don't get to tell it often enough, but my wife drove a vehicle for 18 years. We bought it in 05, and we just sold it last year, and it had almost, I think it had 273,000 miles on it. And the key was, I just fixed whatever was broke.
Yeah.
It was... When it breaks, we just fix it, right? And the key for everyone that has a vehicle is to maintain it and keep it up so that you can keep it for a long time. And the really interesting part is the people that do that don't have to buy cars as often. That's number one.
Right.
But number two, when you have something detrimental, then you have a choice. And when I say detrimental, I'm talking transmission, rear end, engine. We're starting to see now where it's way less expensive to put a transmission in a vehicle than it is to just replace it and go get another vehicle, right?
Right.
And sometimes that's even financeable. So there's a lot of options, and I think the key is just to have a discussion with what it is you're trying to get to and what it is you want to do. In your case, when you have a lot of drivers, it's a way, you know, it is way easier to fix the old stuff than it is to go shop for a new vehicle and or new used vehicle or whatever you're looking for. So I think the key is it's just about taking care of what we got going on. Excuse me. The interesting part is with the striking and with the vehicles not being made, that's also happening. Most people don't realize on the part side. And we're starting to see vehicles that are 15 years and older. It's getting hard to find parts for them. It's getting hard to be able to replace those parts. COVID helped with that, obviously, in 2020. And then you had manufacturers that plainly said, we're not going to support anything that's 10 years old or older. And so we're not making those parts. Yeah. We're not building those parts. So we've had some really cool incidences just trying to find parts for vehicles that are like my wife's that are 18 years old when you're trying to fix them.
Yeah, so what would be maybe that magical kind of time frame, knowing that some of those parts might be harder to come by, knowing that, hey, if you've got this car that's been well taken care of but you need to start doing more and more maintenance, what's kind of that magical number to think, hey, the parts just simply aren't going to be there for it?
Right now, in my professional opinion, that's probably 18 to 20 years old. We actually sold my wife's vehicle and sold it to a young family, and they're still driving it, and we're still fixing it. So, and I think it depends on what you're driving.
Yeah, I was about to say, is it maybe different when it comes to domestic versus import?
Well, I think it's a mixture. I don't think there's one that I could say, well, if you drive a Ford, you can get all the parts you want, or if you drive a Nissan, it won't be a problem. I think it kind of depends on, A, how popular the vehicle was and how many of them they sold. That's number one. And number two, how long they're willing to support it. So, because right now, and I'm sure we're going to get into it today, right now the manufacturers are really focused on electric.
Yes.
And that means that anything with a gasoline or a diesel, we're doing less and less of today, right now.
So what you're saying is that there's going to be more parts out there for a Camry or an Accord versus, you know, maybe a Saturn that the entire brand had a, what, 15-year lifespan?
Right, correct. That's exactly my point. Yeah, I think it depends on brand. I think it depends on how it was supported. My wife's vehicle was a Ford Excursion. They quit making those in 2003. So the interesting part was they quit making them in 2003, but everyone wanted one.
Right.
And so they kept the parts going on that side just because they were so popular. Mm-hmm. So I think it just depends on what you're driving and what the manufacturer really is doing with that vehicle.
So as an F-150 guy, I'm probably going to be okay for a few years.
You're probably going to be okay for a few years.
All right. Awesome. Well, I want to make that kind of pivot here to that electric vehicle side of things, because, you know, as you had said, there are much, much more importance from somebody anyway being put onto the manufacturer
a little
of
bit more emphasis
vehicles.
Put on that
just a little bit in there. When it comes to the repair side of that, what do you see as the future of a place like Leadham's when it comes to there will be eventually more and more of the electric vehicles out there on the road that are coming in with issues? Does that mean you guys basically become like a computer electric engineer? Or are there some actual mechanical things that you guys can work on? And whether that's today or coming down the pike, what do you see a little bit with that future with those electric vehicles out there?
Well, the cool part, I'm going to start by saying, in today's world, gasoline, diesel, electric, they're all headed in the same direction. You are driving your home computer down the road if you're driving anything that's newer than 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So we've become electrical engineers anyway. And we've had to. We do a lot of electrical work. We do a lot of electronics work. Some of the things we fix is no different than turning the power button off on your home computer and turn it back on and let it reboot, because there are a ton of electronics in newer vehicles. That's number one. Number two, I think on the electric side of things, it's going to be interesting to see where we go, because I do not think, and this is my personal opinion, not my professional opinion, I don't believe electric vehicles are sustainable in our country. We don't have the infrastructure. We've already seen the big cities, New York, California, all of those big places. They don't have enough electricity to run air conditioners when it gets hot.
Right.
And now everyone's going to have an electric car in the garage. Well, if you can't run your air conditioner, you're surely not going to be able to charge your car. So some big, big infrastructure is going to have to take place. And to boot, if you talk to someone like Elon Musk and you pay attention to him at all, he says he didn't build Tesla so that there was one in everyone's garage. He said, he also says it's not sustainable.
Well,
so,
I mean, he didn't really build it first.
Right.
He kind of came in, got, you know, took credit for two other guys' work, but that's another show for another time.
Yes.
But let me ask you this, when it comes to, you know, kind of that repair in with an electric vehicle, because there could be some people in the market for them.
Yes.
But knowing that it has kind of that, you know, late 90s, early 2000s feel with a lot of startups, different companies coming in, but that sustainability. We talked about the parts earlier, and, you know, your wife's Excursion, a great example. They were still supporting it and making parts because Ford had the infrastructure.
Yes.
But we don't know how that's going to be for a number of these startup electric companies, and it's so proprietary. It's not like, you know, back in the day when, like, you know, Studebaker went out, years later, it was still simple enough. You could still work on a carburetor or engine parts where you may not, depending on how long these companies last.
Right. Well, and the key is, and I keep telling our team, the key is electric vehicles are also very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you just pull in like we do with other vehicles and go to work on, because there's a lot of voltage involved. I even talked to a fire department out east of here, and they have to take 3,000 gallons of water. And if you're in a wreck in one of those vehicles, they can't cut you out of it because all of the voltage runs in the roof.
Wow.
And so, and then once they get whatever's wrong handled, they have to let the battery soak because they have the potential of catching on fire too. And so there's just a lot of that. Mm. There's just a lot of that stuff going on. And the key is... It's a sustainability issue, number one, but number two, it will either grow to where everyone's doing it and it becomes the norm.
Right.
Or it's just an advantage that you have if you want to own one.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think we're in that mode right now is, in America, is it sustainable? Does it work?
Yeah. Well, and there's another, you know, kind of segment that we haven't hit on that's kind of in between that kind of bridge, you know, a lot of those hybrid cars. And we know a lot of those were really popular, but now they're getting up in the, you know, age as well, especially, you know, those Priuses. Is there a lot of maintenance that you might have to do on some of those aging hybrid cars when it comes to that electric side that intermingles with the gas side?
Yeah, you will, because the key is everything's run with a battery, and batteries go bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just do. And so the key is, you can only, just like our phones, if you just use our phones for an example, and I don't know how you guys do it, but I've had a phone for a very long time and had to go get a new one. And now if you look at phones, they're telling us to replace them every 2 years.
Right.
And the reason they're doing that is the sustainability of the battery and the software that runs those phones. And I think cars, if it stays sustainable, the cars are going to be the same way. You're going to be getting another electric car every 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, that's as the guy who would prefer to buy my phone and then have it for 10 years until it just doesn't work anymore.
Yes.
I've actually been replacing every couple of years because somewhere along the line it's done an update and turned itself into a brick. It won't turn on anymore. You just got to go get a new one because it's the planned obsolescence.
And when you're driving an electric car, you're driving what you have in your pocket as a phone. That's what you're driving down the road.
Well, you know, my buddy Tim out in Cupertino could help you with that phone problem.
we'll probably need to talk at some point on that. Well, folks, we are up against that final break in today's show. When we come back, We're going to be wrapping up today's show with Greg Budwine over at Leadem. So stick around. We will be right back.
Does stock market volatility have you wondering which way is up? Do the talking heads and doomsayers have you wondering if this really is the end? If you want straight answers from an advisor who isn't just trying to sell you something, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment today. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Well, folks, thanks for sticking around with us through that break. Rick Stevens here with FRS Financial sponsoring Money Matters. This week in studio with Andrew Rogers, with Greg Budwine from Leadem's Performance Diesel and Repair. And Budwine, we both have similar hairstyles.
Yes, we do.
So we can talk about the back in the day sort of thing. And
yes,
it goes further back than Andrew's day. So we can get that old nostalgia going on in here. So I want to ask a little bit about the engine, and in particular, oil. Right? So again, back in the day, when
back
I was a kid,
yes,
we almost always used that 10-weight oil, whether it was a 10W30 or a 10W40. Sometimes it was a 20-weight. But now there's stuff like a 5-weight and a 0-weight oil. Mm-hmm. What in the world is the difference amongst all of those? And why is it that we can use those lower weights these days?
Well, that's a great question. So I'm going to try to answer it and not take too long.
But that's all right. We got a whole segment.
If you use a 10W30 or 10W40, I don't know who knows this, but the W stands for winter. Okay? So when it gets colder, that oil gets thinner.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's hotter outside, so if you're running a 10W40, in the wintertime when it's close to freezing, that oil's a 10. And when it's hot outside and it's 90, that oil's a 40. Okay, that's what it was designed to do. The reason was because back in the day, when we had carburetors and we didn't have fuel injection, the bearing clearance on the crank was very, very, very thick compared to today's cars. And they didn't get very good fuel economy. You can take a 70s model, an 80s model, a 90 models vehicle. I don't care. They did not get the fuel economy that we get today.
Right.
And the reason mostly is because of the way the fuel system worked, and because we used bigger is better, we had more horsepower, we had hot rods back then, we had big pistons, we had big cranks. It was now that's totally different. Everything in a vehicle today is very small. The pistons are small, the bearing clearances are very tiny, and because of that, it doesn't take a thicker oil to keep everything lubed so you can drive the vehicle for a long time, and they get better fuel economy. I did some research here not too long ago, and if you can run any oil you want to, right? But if you take a 10W40 like you and I are used to and run it for a while in a vehicle and then change it to a 020 or a 040 or a 030 or a 05 for that matter, that car will get better fuel economy.
Wow.
Because there's less resistance when it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
And it also protects better because it can flow better. So it can get to everything it needs to get to quicker. I don't like it, just personally, because I believe that when you say zero, how much confidence do you have that everything's getting lubed?
Right.
Because zero means there is nothing there. Right. So I have a tendency to lean on the higher side.
Mm-hmm.
We don't run very much stuff. We don't change very many oils with 020, and it's all because of my belief system. But you do suffer a little bit in fuel economy. You're going to suffer a little bit in warming it up. It takes a little longer, right? And so most of the manufacturers went to that for two reasons. One is they could run it longer. If you look in any owner's manual in today's car, you and I would never, I still can't. I cannot change the oil in a car every 10,000 miles.
Right.
I mean, I'm probably going to live to be 90, and that will never happen in my world.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the weight of that oil, and because it doesn't take as much of it, and because the engines are so much cleaner, they can go longer on an oil change. So that's pretty much where that weight transfer comes in. And you'll also notice the smaller the car, and when I say the smaller the car, the smaller the engine, the smaller the vehicle, the more prevalent that 0-20 or that 0-30 is.
Awesome. Well, kind of sticking in that oil world, we've got all kinds of different options out there, right? You've got your regular, your synthetic, your blended. I see stuff out there that calls itself high mileage. I see some things that say they've got particular additives in there. What in the world do folks need to be looking at and thinking about when it does come to that oil that is really keeping that engine in good working order for a lot of years?
Well, the unfortunate part, that's a tough one to explain. we'd need a whole nother show on oils to get that done. But I will tell you that in most vehicles today, a synthetic blended oil is a good oil because it does two things. Not only does it lubricate, it also cleans.
Mm-hmm.
Regular oil doesn't do that. And a full synthetic, you have to, the manufacturers have really blown up the full synthetic world. And I've always had a hard time with that because I believe a good petroleum-based oil with a good moly additive really reduces friction.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have much else to say to that because, like I said, it's a whole show. You can look at heat temperatures and what heat does to synthetics versus regular versus full synthetic. You can do a lot of homework on that deal. But the key is, for me, we got to make sure that we're putting close to what the manufacturer described in the car.
Okay.
We got to try to get as close as we can. It doesn't have to be perfect because really, again, back in the day,
right?
We keep going back to that, right? used to walk into an auto parts because you changed your own oil,
right?
And you had three choices.
Yeah.
Today you have 25.
Yeah. There used to be Pennzoil or Quaker State.
1030.
And it was 1030 or 1040.
Yes.
That was pretty much it.
Yes. Yes. And so there's just been oils changed just like technology. So they've really come a long ways with oil. The Pennzoil of back in the 60s is not what it is today. It's totally different. It's got a lot different additives. And the manufacturers have requested that, A, because of the metals they're using in these engines now, and B, they don't have to have a lot of weight. So it's, like I said, we could take a whole nother show and talk about oil.
So then what do you recommend for, maybe some of us who don't have that back in the day experience or, those cars that were built in the, dirty modern era that the manufacturer calls for that zero weight? What should we do going into a shop to make sure that we're taking care of it as close to what the factory recommends, but also looking at that longevity?
So just so you know, in our shop,
okay,
we don't use anything less than a 520.
Okay.
Just so you know. And we have two options. We have regular oil, and we have Schaefer's lubricants, which is a moly. It's a petroleum-based oil with a moly additive, and I run Schaefer's in everything I own to include my lawnmower.
Okay.
And it's a petroleum-based oil, but it's a synthetic blend, and it does a really good job of keeping everything lubricated, keeping the heat down, and taking the trash out. So.
Okay.
Nice. So kind of looking at that going, I've got to make sure there's something there. So there's no zero.
Yes.
Right? There's no zero in there.
Yes.
But also kind of getting that the best of both worlds in that the petroleum synthetic blend, because it does have those additives to clean up some of the stuff going on. It's got that opportunity to run at a little bit better temperature and keep things running longer.
Yes.
I always like keeping things running longer.
It yes.
comes in handy.
It
that
comes
way.
It does come in handy.
So speaking,
and the cool part is, not to interrupt, but the cool part is a semi-synthetic blend will also help you get better fuel economy.
Yeah.
So that's why I like it, because it keeps the friction down, and it's no different than us when we're working out or when we're trying to exercise or climb Pike's Peak. The better hydrated we are, the better we perform, right?
Yeah.
And so oil's kind of that same way.
Yep, very much so. So kind of sticking into that, helping things run and having them in that longer world. I go through a lot of tires, Budwine. I got a lot of vehicles.
Yes,
I go through a lot of tires.
Yes.
When are those times? Because I know every owner's manual on every vehicle I have has a different number on all of these. When should I be getting tires rotated? When should I be thinking about things like an alignment? And when do I just need to go, you know what, I actually just need new tires on this?
That's a great question.
Got a whole show on that one, too?
Yeah, well, the interesting part is it depends on what you do with the vehicle. I'm going to go back to that again, right? But for the basics of tire rotations, we try to keep it really simple.
Mm-hmm.
And we base tire rotations on when you change your oil, right? So some people prefer, like me, I'm still a 5,000 guy. We got guys that go 10, right? Well, if you're that 10,000 guy, you probably ought to be getting your tires rotated every oil change.
Mm-hmm.
Just make it part of the deal. If you're a 5,000 guy like me, you could probably do every other oil change.
Mm-hmm.
The more you rotate the tires, and depends on the vehicle, the longer they will last. Because depending on if it's a front-wheel drive or a rear-wheel drive or a rear-wheel drive with four-wheel drive, that all matters in how the tires get used. But good rotations, you can go a long time on a set of tires. And it's the one thing that most people don't do. And it's the easiest thing. It's kind of like, I tell people, it's kind of like brushing your teeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody goes to the dentist once a year and they go, well, you haven't been brushing your teeth very good, huh? Well, you know, you wouldn't have that cavity if you were brushing your teeth every day, right? Tires are kind of the same way. The other cool part on tires is there's a date code on those tires. So even though they look good and there's plenty of tread and they balance good and they rotate really nice, there's a timestamp on those tires. And we recommend tires after you've had them for 6 years,
mm-hmm.
just because we're in the hot and we're in the cold, that rubber's breaking down, and that date code is huge to us.
Yeah. And that's one of those things. And, you know, like you, I am that 5,000 mile
yes.
guy.
Yes.
Just because, yeah, it was hard enough for me to go from 3 to 5,000.
Yes, me too.
Let alone going beyond that. So
yes.
Yeah. I'm in that same world. Maybe last overarching sort of piece in here, and that's it, for those folks that have actually paid attention to either what the owner's manual or the fuel cap, if they have it, says, there are some of those vehicles out there that say premium fuel only,
mm-hmm.
right? Not the cheap stuff. Not the 85,
right?
You've got to go put in the 89 or the 91 or whatever it is, depending on, quite frankly, your altitude. Because out here, 85 is the low end. I go back to Illinois, 87
is the low end.
Yep. And I really don't understand why 87 is the low end there, but it's the mid grade here. But back there, it's the same price as the low end here. Anyway, I would have thought 87 costs what 87 costs wherever, but that's a totally different show as
that's
well.
That's another show.
But my question is on here: if it says premium fuel only, does it really need that premium fuel? Does that actually matter in the way that engine runs?
Yes.
All right, look at that. We didn't even get the Evan answer for that one. We didn't get an it depends. We got a straight answer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. The key is the manufacturer said to run premium fuel so that it runs most optimally with that premium fuel in it. Does that mean it can't run on 85? No, you can put 85 in that car. You can put 87 in that car. Some of those cars you can put E85 in. You can put some ethanol in them. The key is the manufacturer made that engine specific to having premium fuel. So that keeps us from having knock sensor issues, keeps the car from pinging, especially at high altitude. I tell people all the time, it's a case-by-case basis, but the manufacturer built that vehicle to run on premium fuel.
Well, and
that's
then,
what they did.
Let me ask you this, because I'm one that it says 87 on the gas door. Am I okay then here in the altitude with 85, or do I need to go up to that middle level?
Well, I'll tell you guys right now, I own three gas vehicles, and nothing gets anything above 85.
Okay.
Very good. So is kind of staying in that fuel vein here,
mm-hmm.
right? We see various different places that claim, you know, we put these detergents in or those detergents in, or we have nothing in there, or this is pure fuel. Does any of that stuff really matter to what's going on? Should I pick, you know, gas station A because it's got such and such detergent techno this in it versus gas station B that's like, no, we got gas?
Well, the key to that is there's no way to measure it. So some fuels are going to have more cleaners. Diesel fuel is that way. especially when you get back east. You can't. We sell number two diesel here.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hardly find number two diesel back east. It's whatever that manufacturer decided is good for the vehicle. And there isn't. I don't think there's a standard that says, okay, this is gasoline and this is all that's in it. Does that make sense?
It does. So
kind of a weird answer, but
short version, it seems to me then, is the gas stations that are out there going, but we've got all these detergents. It's the answer is like, so.
Right.
You've got a great marketing department.
Yes. They got a great marketing department. Yes. And most of our fuel, just like oil, most of our fuel comes from two or three different places, and that's it anyway.
So it's all the same tanker dropping it off no matter what they say.
Right. And most of it's getting piped to us anyway, so it is what it is.
Whoa. And then again with this, and this may not be exactly in that wheelhouse, but that old wives' tale of if you're pulling up to a gas station and you see the tanker truck there filling up those underground tanks, is it true to avoid that fill up at that time and to come back when they're not dumping into the tanks?
I leave.
Okay.
That's not a wives' tale. And the only reason is if you took a glass of water and mm-hmm. you set it on the counter and you poured some rocks and mud in that cup, what mm-hmm. would happen?
It'd mix around.
That's exactly what happens when they dump those tankers.
Okay.
That's how I explain that. And if there's a tanker in a gas station, unless it's the only gas station for 100 miles, I'm leaving.
Yep.
And you also have, today's getting really bad. We're starting to see where the tanker truck put the wrong fuel in the wrong tank at the gas station.
Yeah.
And he didn't do it intentionally. It just happened. And I do not want any part of that.
Yep, for sure. So to kind of wrap up a little bit here on the day, but when I know you guys are actually looking for more help, because folks, Elitums, you're growing.
We got some great team members. We're looking to add to our team. And like I tell everyone, everywhere we go, we're just people serving people one truck at a time. So if you want to serve, we'd love to have you. It's
awesome.
Pretty cool team to work with.
Awesome. So how do folks get in touch, whether that's they're looking for the opportunity to serve, they've got three or four vehicles in their fleet that need an oil change coming up because you're coming up on the 5,000 miles.
Yeah,
how do they get in touch?
There's one way, easy to get to us, and that's at leadums.com. Click on the contact page. It comes right to us. We'll be right back with you. If you want to make an appointment, we still, we're old school because we're people serving people. So that takes a telephone call if you need some work on your truck, and that's at 719-574-7801. You can still contact us online if it's easier for you, but we will create a relationship. That's what we do, and that's why we're looking for some more help.
Awesome. Well, Budwine, thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, that is all the time that we've got for this edition of Money Matters. If you've got those questions, if you weren't sure, you didn't quite catch the contact info there, you want to know how do you get in touch with Leadums, you can feel free to give me a holler, 719-500-8700. Be happy to get you in touch with those guys over there. Folks, we will be back again next week. We will be continuing to talk about your money because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.